patriotic tunes, there is one that seems to have captured the hearts of America more than any other. And that's, of course, John Philip Sousa's thrilling march, The Stars and Stripes Forever. You have heard it whenever there's been a parade down the main street in your town. Or maybe you've marched to its strains on your way to assembly in school. Certainly you've heard it dozens of times on your radio and TV. The Stars and Stripes Forever symbolizes our nation in music just as much as the flag after which it's named. And quite appropriately, the man who composed it was born in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Was one of 10 children, born to a German mother and a Spanish father on November the 6th, 1854. Since most of his family wasn't especially musical, John Philip never heard much music at home. His father, however, did play the trombone, indeed, well enough to be a member of the United States Marine Band. John Philip loved to listen often to the band music coming from the nearby barracks. This delighted his father, so much so that he decided to enroll his young son in a music school. John Philip made fine progress, particularly on the violin. In fact, when he was only 11, he organized a group of unemployed musicians, all older than himself, to play at dance halls and dancing schools. This turned out to be a very successful venture for a while. Soon after that, John Philip received an offer from the band leader of a circus. This, of course, was a pretty hard thing for a boy to turn down, and he made plans to run away. John Philip's father, however, got wind of the offer. Very early the next morning, he paid a visit to the Marine Barracks, just two blocks away, had a talk with the commandant, and before the morning was over, John Philip was accepted by the Marine Band as an apprentice. Needless to say, the circus offer was soon forgotten, and the next 8 years were quite happy for John Philip. Inevitably, John Philip became restless, just being an apprentice, and since he was often in the position of having to turn down more exciting musical jobs, he decided to ask for an honorable discharge. A variety of musical experiences were in store for him, and one very memorable one was playing first violin in a large orchestra at the Centennial Festival in Philadelphia back in 1876. The conductor of this orchestra was none other than Jacques Offenbach, the noted French composer of such sparkling works as The Tales of Hoffman, Orpheus in the Underworld, and La Vie Parisienne. Offenbach came over from Paris especially for the centennial, and naturally his programs often included selections from his comic operas, such as this one. During the season of 1878-79, John Philip's life was again involved in the world of comic opera. This time, it was Gilbert and Sullivan, whose HMS Pinafore was just making its first appearance over here. Everyone was captivated by Pinafore, and there were many productions to be seen in practically all large cities. John Philip was asked to coach and conduct an amateur production in Philadelphia. This, as it turned out, was to be a most happy experience for him. Not only was the cast an exceptionally gifted one, but he fell deeply in love with one of its members, a beautiful and delightful 16-year-old girl named Jane Bellis. In John Philip Sousa's autobiography, Marching Along, he described her as quite the loveliest little girl I had ever seen. She had a cloud of chestnut hair and a perfect complexion. I liked everything about her, her manner, her speech, her face, her voice. Jane and John Philip were married on New Year's Eve, 1879, and eventually became the parents of three children, John Philip Jr., Priscilla, and Helen. Vacationing with his bride on Cape May the following spring, Sousa turned his hand to the composing of an operetta. Like almost everything that he set his mind to doing, the result was very successful. The name of the operetta was Our Flirtations, and following a good run in Philadelphia, a long road tour was arranged, with the composer conducting. By the time he reached St. Louis, he was greeted by a letter from his father urging the March King to come back to Washington at once, this time to accept the job of conductor of the United States Marine Band. Needless to say, another conductor was soon found for Our Flirtations, and Sousa reported for duty with the Marine Band on October 1st, 1880. He found conditions in the band pretty sad. The salaries were shockingly low, the morale even lower, and the repertoire and even uniforms badly in need of being brought up to date. All of this, under Sousa's new regime, was corrected, and the band soon was looking and sounding better than ever. The first function of the band, with Sousa as conductor, was playing at a New Year's Day reception in the White House. In contrast to the loud, blaring sounds made by the band at previous receptions, Sousa decided to keep the music discreetly soft so that conversation among diplomats would not be strained. President Rutherford B. Hayes welcomed this change greatly and let Sousa know of his appreciation. Following Hayes' term of office, James Garfield became the new chief executive, but Sousa scarcely had an opportunity to know him, for only a few months after the inauguration, President Garfield's life was ended by an assassin's bullet. Chester A. Arthur now succeeded to office. But since there was still a period of mourning, the new president did not use the band at first. This gave Sousa a most welcome chance not only to rehearse the band thoroughly, but also to do composing. He wrote tone poems, songs, waltzes, polkas, but inevitably his greatest successes were marches. The first of these to become a hit was The Gladiator. Amazing as it may seem, 17 different bands played it during the course of a single parade in Philadelphia. Overly fond of the traditional air, Hail to the Chief, which has always been played at official functions to signal the arrival of a president. He told Sousa that he didn't care for the tune, and Sousa completely agreed. In that case, said the president, change it, which Sousa promptly did. He wrote a presidential polonaise, and while he was about it, the March King felt that the Marine Corps could also use an official number to be played at outdoor functions. This turned out to be one of the most stirring marches ever written, Semper Fidelis. Thank you. more marchers Sousa wrote, the more the public wanted. The success of Semper Fidelis prompted organizations of all kinds to request specially composed marchers. One of these was a newspaper called The Washington Post, which was sponsoring an essay contest among the pupils in public schools. 20,000 essays were handed in, and the prizes were to be distributed at the grounds of the Smithsonian Institute on June 15, 1889. To make the occasion really festive, the Marine Band was not only called upon to play, but its conductor was also asked to compose a march for an audience of the 20,000 young contestants. This would be a refreshing change from his past assignments, and he was especially happy to oblige. And the especially happy-sounding result was the Washington Post's march. Washington Post March became an instantaneous hit, not only in Washington, but soon throughout the entire country. Everyone was humming it, whistling it, and even dancing to its catchy rhythm. And eventually, the Washington Post March made Sousa a celebrity in the most unlikely parts of the globe. An American officer heard it played on the violin by a native boy in Borneo. A little French peasant girl picked it out on a piano. It was even played in Germany at the dedication of a monument to Richard Wagner. And later, when the Sousas visited Italy, someone told them that the composer of the Washington Post March was one of the most famous Italian composers by the name of Giovanni Filippo Sousa. Could have been more delighted than Sousa to think that this worldwide favorite had been inspired by the prospect of 20,000 children as his audience. Later, in fact, he dedicated another of his marches to a company of high school cadets in Washington and named it, very appropriately, the High School Cadets March. When President Benjamin Harrison took office, Sousa approached him with the idea of taking the Marine Band on a national tour. It so happened that the president had been thinking of going on a personal goodwill tour himself. However, on thinking it over, he decided that the sight of colorful uniforms and the thrilling sound of the Marine Band playing Sousa marches might be a good deal more effective. To handle the tour, they selected David Blakely, a wealthy man from Chicago, who at one time had been president of the Minneapolis Philharmonic, and knew his way about the concert field. The tour, which lasted 5 weeks, was most successful. Traveling way back in the 90s, though, was often pretty uncomfortable, and the schedule of 8 or 9 concerts a week wore the men out. Sousa himself was completely exhausted when he got back to Washington, and the Navy doctor ordered a long vacation for him, perhaps a European trip. Mrs. Sousa, of course, was delighted with what the doctor ordered, and so off they went to London, to Bayreuth, to Paris, to all the places and the sights that they had read and heard about. Thank you. this leisure time, Sousa had a good chance to do some thinking about his career. He realized he was not a very good businessman. In fact, he'd sold several of his most popular marches, such as Semper Fidelis, Washington Post, and High School Cadets, to a Philadelphia music publisher for only $35 apiece outright. It was getting a little irritating to think that he was known from coast to coast as the March King, and yet, as the conductor of the United States Marine Band, his salary was only $1,500 a year. David Blakely, as well, was doing some hard things. He was finding it more and more difficult to book the Marine Band because of opposition from local orchestras and bands who felt it was unfair to have to compete with a federal organization. Finally, he proposed to Sousa that he quit the Marine Band and form his own. Further, Blakely proposed to raise Sousa's salary from $1,500 to $6,000 a year, plus 20% of the profit. This was much too good to reject, of course, even though the March King did have certain qualms about resigning a government position. But resign he did. Sousa led the Marine Band for the last time on parade at the White House on July 30th, 1892, with the stirring strains of his Washington Post March. Sousa's band started out famously. Many bookings, many tours were planned. They played at the Trocadero in Chicago, run by the same Ziegfeld who was later to originate the Ziegfeld Follies. They had an engagement at the San Francisco Midwinter Fair. And then there was another engagement at the old Madison Square Garden in New York, with a program made up entirely of Sousa compositions. A series of European tours followed, and even a trip around the world for Sousa and his band in 1910 and 11. It's no wonder that one of his most inspired marches is called Hands Across the Sea. Sousa's first operetta, Our Flirtations, as mentioned earlier, was very popular. But the best remembered of his operetta scores is El Capitan, produced in the spring of 1896 and starring a very famous acting couple, DeWolf and Edna Wallace Hopper. Several of the best tunes were gathered together by Sousa to make up the El Capitan March. In the fall of 1896, Sousa and his wife were enjoying another European vacation when they were shocked to read of the sudden death of David Blakely, the man who had 4 years before persuaded Sousa to form his own band. They booked passage for New York immediately. And here is what Sousa himself wrote in his autobiography of an incident on that voyage. As the vessel steamed out of the harbor, I was pacing the deck, absorbed in thoughts of my manager's death and the many duties and decisions which awaited me in New York. Suddenly, I began to sense the rhythmic beat of a band playing within my brain. It kept on, ceaselessly, playing, playing, playing. Throughout the whole tense voyage, that imaginary band continued to unfold the same themes, echoing and re-echoing the most distinct melody. I did not transfer a note of that music to paper while I was on the steamer, but when we reached shore, I set down the measures that my brain band had been playing for me, and not a note of it has ever changed. The composition is known the world over as the Stars and Stripes Forever, and is probably my most popular march. John Philip Sousa in 1928, 4 years before his death. Today, of course, the Stars and Stripes Forever is more popular than ever, certainly America's greatest march. And John Philip Sousa, after all these years, is still our own, undisputed, March King.